It is 6 o'clock p.m. over here in the uttermost west, Taipei, Hong Kong, China time. For those of you in America who don't know, all of China could have 4 or 5 time zones. They're on one time zone. They all go by Beijing's clock because they think that makes them unified somehow. But I need to say some things about this election. And so this is a special podcast. I don't know how long it's going to go. I'm not numbering it like I typically do. I made a prediction back. Can I get the date from this? 39 weeks ago. And I put my stake down. I said who I thought the candidates were going to be. It was a Hillary Trump race that I predicted. And it's on Instagram. I wrote the thing out and there it is. And I wrote up a little article, which I linked to in the description. So jessesteele.com, look at my Instagram, scroll down, you'll find an election map. And it's pretty much what I said. Now, there were a couple differences, and I want to talk about these differences, and I want to talk about why I thought things would go this way. I had 282 in favor of Trump against Hillary, 256. That was my prediction. And I'm going to tell you what my thinking was at that time and where I went wrong. I was right about the left coast. I was right about the north. At this time, New Hampshire still hasn't been called. It's like 0.1% difference. We're talking, 670 vote difference when 70,000 haven't been counted was the last time I saw. Like, New Hampshire was close. I had New Hampshire as the only red state in the Northeast. Virginia and North Carolina, I had them flipped. I had Michigan and Pennsylvania as red. And I wrote very clearly, they could go red, but they'll probably go blue. I will be pleasantly surprised if they won't. And then I was wrong about Nevada and New Mexico. They went blue. I had them as red. I said Colorado would go against Trump because of marijuana. They legalize marijuana. Trump says, you don't get to choose. The federal government does. And marijuana should be illegal. And we're going to punish you in Colorado if you do. He basically said something like that. I said, well, Colorado's never going to go Trump. New Mexico, I thought that New Mexico would empathize with Texas and Arizona on illegals. I know that people, a lot of farmers by the border have problems with runners. And I thought that New Mexico would agree with that. I thought too much about New Mexico's southern border, and I didn't think enough about New Mexico's northern border with Colorado. And I should have done better with Nevada. They got Vegas and they're next to Cali. So other than that, I was right. Michigan was close. Pennsylvania was the last one that Fox called, before all the fireworks started, or didn't rather over Hillary had her fireworks thing planned. So I was pretty much dead on. I had Minnesota as blue and it was. And like I said, New Hampshire, whatever, it was close. That was the reddest state in the Northeast, even if it goes blue. So I need to tell you, if you're one of my friends who is in shock, I mean, like you're surprised, you were voting for Hillary, I owe you an explanation of what I think, if for no other reason than you can know specifically in detail how to disagree with me. We all owe it to each other as friends to make disagreeing with each other easy and clear. At my father's funeral, they said of him, his friends did. I'm his son. I'm not my father's friend. I hope I am, but I'm his son first. And they said of my father, everyone knew, you knew where you stood with him. That was one of the beautiful things about him. There wasn't ever a question. Now, if you were a Hillary person, I'm not angry at Hillary people. I don't have a problem with you as a human being if you were a Hillary person. And I'm not going to say, I'm not going to do that. I've come to understand and develop my own, can I say, as a non-expert psychological profile, my own, in as much as I'm able, we all have our psychological profiles of each other, let's be honest. I've kind of developed my own personality. Yes, George, I'm rattling the empty paper. You want me to talk about Juan Williams. All right. I agreed with Sean Hannity. They needed to get Juan Williams off of that because Juan Williams... No. Later on, Juan started saying things that did make sense after it was called. But no, actually, I agree and disagree. I'm gonna go for middle line here. I'm gonna do the moderate rhino thing for just a moment on Juan Williams. Had Juan Williams not been there, Hannity wouldn't have been able to complain about him. Juan Williams was going through his postmortem on air. We saw, hey, just, I can't believe it. And there was this other girl that was totally pro-Trump, and she wouldn't get off the email thing. That irritated me. There was this pro-Trump girl, and there was this anti-Trump Juan Williams. Both of them couldn't get off of a couple things, and it was annoying. It was old news. You didn't have to re-explain the problem with Hillary's email. You just needed to say, the email did it, and that's all you had to say. But they thought they had to re-explain it again. Juan Williams, he couldn't just say, I'm a liberal. I'm in shock. He couldn't say that. He had to re-explain his liberal talking points. He did. Don't explain your talking points, people. Don't explain to people things that everybody already knows. Just say, you know that topic that we could argue about, but we both know what we're going to say? Yeah, well... this is where we both are on that. Let's talk about something else. Let's get new ideas covered. That's how to have a decent conversation. Don't be childish like the young gal that was pro-Trump and Juan Williams, who was surprised. Juan Williams was caught off guard and his ideas were coming up. Chris Wallace, too, was shocked. And I couldn't believe that Chris Wallace, Captain Sunday of the conservative network, let his viewers know that he was shocked. So, all right. Venting and punditness completed. I want to say some things about my election map. Michigan. I said I would be glad to be pleasantly surprised. I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, at the last minute, I suppose it could flip blue, but it really looked red there. And Pennsylvania, likewise. I wanted to believe in Michigan, but maybe too many people in the Detroit area aborted their own. All the people that teach Darwin are the most anti-Darwinian as far as the survival of their political species. I said it. So... why did I have this understanding? Why did I make this map that was pretty darn accurate, except for my two big ready-to-make concessions, Michigan and Pennsylvania? Hold on, I need to have some water, and maybe you should too. If you can pause and go smoke a cigarette if that's what you do. Only when I'm writing to answer your question. And yes, just before this, I grew up surrounded by people who have never started and sustained a profitable company. I was around Enoch Olson from Spring Hill, who started a nonprofit organization, but he couldn't manage. He'd joke with me about it. Enoch would tell jokes with me, and he says, I couldn't manage anything to save my life. I had board members give me these books, say, Enoch, you gotta read these books on management, and I couldn't manage anything. But I mean, he started a nonprofit, not a business, but a nonprofit. And it was amazing. I mean, he was a founder. He thought like a founder. He did founder things. He cut the edge. And it's really easy for someone with an MDiv or an MBA to come in behind a founder as the quote unquote great successor, as the North Koreans call them, and just run an organization into the ground. And I was around two amazing, fantastic, great successors. Enoch started a large congregational fellowship. Some people still call them a church, even though there's only one of those in the universe. But he started one, and it was big. And that guy was at an MDiv, star of his class. I taught piano lessons to his kids. And there was Enoch started Spring Hill. That guy, they had this great, you know, great successor leader type come along. Awesome man. I taught piano lessons to his kids. There was another camp down the road, Cran Hill. They had a director. I taught piano lessons to his kids. And, you know, we're all kind of still in touch, interestingly. And, you know, these are all leaders or successors in nonprofit. Then I had an amazing band director. Astounding. All these people taught me leadership. The band director went in with a high school band of 12 people. After he was there for, 7-8 years? It was 20% of the school was his band. He was the one that told me, Jesse, you can't be drum major because you're too good at rifle captain and we need a good rifle captain. And the rifle squad doubled under me from 1 year to the next. Now, I mean, he was right. Knew how to lead. Amazing lead. I grew up around amazing leaders, but none of them started businesses. They all worked and breathed and lived and succeeded, or maybe failed to some extent, in the nonprofit or public funded sector. None of the great amazing leaders I grew up with led or started businesses that paid the taxes to pay for the public funding, or started businesses that gave money to the charity projects. None of them did that. Until in college, after college, I went out to Wheaton and I had a sit down two times with Dr. Ken Taylor, AKA the man who wrote the Bible. He did the Living Translation, started Tyndale House Publishing. He was actually the editor, I do believe, the editor in chief over at the press. At Moody Press. Moody Press originally published the Living Bible, got tired of it. Yeah, we don't want this Bible. And then so he left, you know, Moody and went and started Tyndale House Publishing to publish the Living Bible. Interestingly, Jerry Jenkins was a writer for Moody. Jerry Jenkins wrote the Left Behind series. He was a writer for Moody. Who picked it up? Who picked up his series after Moody rejected it? Tyndale again. That's it. Tyndale's where all Moody's successful rejects go. Let's take. I don't know if Rob Bell ever applied to Moody, George, but he did go to Wheaton. He probably wouldn't be able to get into Moody. Anyhow, I. Ken Taylor was a man that started an organization. It was profitable. He helped the church. He helped charity causes by making a profit that could be donated back doing it. Jerry Jenkins became a trustee at Moody and donated millions to them, I do believe. I don't want to talk about people's money, but it was big amounts of money. I took him food while I was at Moody. And I also got around an Amway diamond, one of the fastest growing in all of Amway, Dave Lewis. And so from Ken Taylor and Dave Lewis, these were my first encounters with people who actually cut the fray. They didn't just live in the fray. They didn't just ski in the wake of someone else's boat. They broke the waves. They had the momentum. They started the companies that would give the donations to things that Enoch, to charities that people like Enoch Olson would start. And so they paid the taxes that my high school band was able to get money from and have a school and have uniforms fundraisers, nonprofit charity stuff in public funding to be able to do the things that I did. I grew up living off of the donations and taxes of people that I didn't understand. And in and after college, I began to talk to the people who actually did start those things. And as I talked to them and understood them, I began to listen to how they would talk, and I would talk to myself so that I would be able to survive, so that I would be able to not become a train wreck over here in Asia because of legal technicalities that are just difficult to understand. I've survived over here from things that I learned from the entrepreneur cutting edge types. It's really easy to coach from the bleachers, to drive from the back seat or the passenger seat. It's really easy to sit on the train and complain about the noise from the engine. Even a pure electrolysis hydrogen engine is going to produce noise and heat. And I didn't understand that. I grew up hearing about tone of voice and manners and getting along with people from people that weren't cutting the fray. And when I finally sat down with the man who was making $50 million a year at one point, the man who gave most of the money that our little church had, the people who'd actually pay the bills, whether through taxes or through donations, when I finally sat down with those people, I began to make fewer excuses for myself. I began to talk to myself in certain ways. And I mean, now I do some marketing and strategizing for some friends that have businesses, and we're about to step on some stuff and go gangbusters with that. I've got other predictions and projects that I've got spinning up that are going to become true, just like my election map. Sorry for tapping with my microphone that I'm not supposed to tap. I'm talking with my hands here, as if you can see me, and I'm whacking things while I'm doing it. And I've got my blank paper here that I rattle around so that it sounds like I'm doing something or reading something. So as I look at the people that genuinely are surprised at the election results, I mean, I don't mean the people that are angry about it. You lose your, this was heated. This was opinionated. Try not to talk about it too much with your friends if they disagree with you for a few days. If you were a Trump supporter and you have friends that weren't, go easy on them. Don't have conversations in the hospital waiting room. We need to cool off for a few days. No, I have a very good friend went to the emergency room. I was told by Friends in America, don't have waiting room conversations. You're at the hospital, you're in the waiting room, don't talk. We tend to talk to pass the time, but conversations in the waiting room at the hospital never go well. You need to just be quiet and wait for the news, and then be quiet and go home and process it. This kid over here in Asia got whacked by a tent. A gust of wind came along. He was skating on the track. Wind knocked the tent over, whacked him on his side just after he won the race. Ended up going to the hospital, and I tried to tell him it's going to be okay because and he interrupted me. I don't care. I only care about my skates. Hundreds of dollars, those skates. He wouldn't listen. I waited until the doctor was gone, and I told him, I got your skates. I went and found him and gave him to your coach. And then he was happy. But I couldn't even give my friend good news waiting in the waiting room. Even if it was the news he wanted to hear. You can't talk to people in the waiting room at the hotel. Or the hotel either, I suppose. But the hospital. Got my wrong HL there. Don't talk to people about the election. One-on-one friend engagement, you disagree about this. Wait a couple days, okay? Write something on Facebook. Let people skip past it. Don't unfriend people over the next couple days. Let's cool off, process, do some listening. As for the people, there are two types of Hillary supporters. I say supporters. No one really liked either candidate. No one. I've got problems with Trump. I don't like the idea of a Republican majority because I saw the hostile takeover taking place in Michigan, and I'm a Republican. At least I am for now. I'm not a rhino. But I'm concerned. I'm worried about this. I've got my concerns. But there's one thing that I saw in Trump. The brash way that he would talk was the same way that I learned to talk to myself. If you want to make the money that pays the taxes to fund the good public projects, if you want to make the money to donate to the nonprofit charities that people live off of and that benefit society, you have to talk to yourself a certain way, and you have to become a butt kicker who's good at kicking your own butt best of all. And I learned to talk to myself that way and not make excuses. And I learned to talk to my friends that way if they wanted to know what I had to say, not if they didn't. And here comes along Trump, trumpeting the same way that I learned to talk to myself. I go, well, there it is. He talks the same way. And just how people misunderstood me, my own parents misunderstood me a little bit. Just as people misunderstood me, so did they have exactly the same misunderstandings about Trump. He said, what? Wait a minute. That's what people used to say to me about what I would say myself. Or about myself. There it was. And so I those things didn't put me off. And ultimately, what we saw in this election is the people who say money talks, the other stuff walks, and don't criticize the mud on the boots of the guy that brings home the bacon. Don't coach from the bleachers. Don't drive from the back seat. And who are the people that really just don't understand Trump? Who are they? They're people who work in the public funding sector, in charities. They have MBAs or, you know, master's degrees programs, come along and work in a comfortable work environment at a company someone else created. They are not familiar with that way of talking. That doesn't make them bad. It's not bad. I grew up with it. I'm good at what I do because of good, effective people who think that way, who don't understand Trump. I had to work to talk a certain way, and lo, Trump talked that way also. So what we saw here, I don't think America would have accepted. A lot of the people that like how Trump talked or didn't mind how he talked, I don't think they would have voted for him even 4 years ago. I think the country has slowly come to understand Trump doesn't try to insult people. I mean, I remember I was a counselor at Spring Hill. And one of the bad kids, quote unquote, got up at the campfire, the talk session. And he said, Jesse talks to us hard and strong because he loves us. And that kid actually helped me understand it's not what you say, it's not how you say it, it's why you say it. You can say anything to people if you love them. And people know, at least they think, they perceive that Trump loves them, that he's genuine, because they recognize that manner of speaking and conduct and talking. And a lot of other people, just good, effective people, who've had valuable lessons that I've learned from, and I ascribe whatever success I may or may not have in my life, now or later, I've learned from people who have good ideas that don't understand Trump's manner of talking. And the only thing that I have a mild, mild passing, it'll pass, objection to, are the people who really are surprised. They're genuinely surprised at the results. I predicted this and went on record in February, and I was pretty close. And the two big ones, Michigan and Pennsylvania, I even had my concessions about them. I said, I'll be pleasantly surprised. You were surprised, or your friends were. I wasn't. This map wasn't what I wanted. I would have loved to have Michigan and Pennsylvania go red. I just really didn't believe that they would. And they were called late in the game. Michigan still wasn't called. Pennsylvania was last, and even Newt and Megan were going at it on TV. You're saying Pennsylvania's in the game? Are you? Well, yeah, Megan, Pennsylvania was in the game. I was wrong. Megan and I were wrong together. There. George, keep it down. Don't interrupt. The podcast observer is supposed to observe, not interrupt. So those are my thoughts. If you were surprised, I mean, if you're upset, be upset. Tell me why. I want to understand. But if you were surprised, if you really were surprised, you really believed it wouldn't happen, maybe you need to go recalibrate. You know, cool off and recalibrate and say, right or wrong, I was wrong about what would happen. Even if Trump is evil and the devil, you should have seen this coming. And I write at the Pacific Daily Times. This is a little online newspaper thing I've started to vent my political stuff. And I do the Symphony blog there. It's a weekly editorial, one on Asia, one on America. Well, East Asia. And over there, the only theme that I have is that it's all predictable, that foresight is possible. If you were surprised, please try to understand what other people appreciated about Trump that they liked or that didn't offend them. I would have hated Trump if I were in high school. Now, one little side thing here. I'm over here in Taiwan. People ask me, what do you think about Trump? And I've got it here. Let me find it. Ubuntu, dual monitors, pages here. Okay. This is what I told my Taiwanese friends. I think Trump knows how to make money, how to lead, how to start something new, how to win. Not afraid of what people think. No one can control him. He is not afraid. He does what he wants, not only to make people vote for him. That's what I think about Trump. And that's what I tell the Taiwanese when they ask me what I think about Trump. I also tell them Trump will be good for Taiwan because Trump knows China. Now, Trump has a way of talking. He sticks his lips out and he talks with this strange, clear diction that seems annoying to some people. Let me tell you something I've learned in Asia about that. One, I had a friend in high school, my little high school rock band that I was sort of in. I was the black sheep because I was the keyboard player and I thought everyone else was always playing the wrong notes. And like I say, I grew up from people where you didn't create anything. You followed someone else's coattails. So I didn't know how to write songs. The people in my little band group did. So that also kind of made me the black sheep. I wish that I'd known how to create. But my teachers would have taught me. We just didn't know. It wasn't for us at the time. We had other important lessons to learn. But in that little rock band, we had a singer. And he'd stick his lips out when he'd sing. And it looked weird. His awesome, renowned vocal instructor taught him to do that, so that his words would be clear and understandable when he would sing songs. And come to think of it, he would stick his lips out as a singer the same way Trump does to make his words easy to understand. Now, after I've lived in Asia for almost 8 years, I've found that I also stick my lips out, and I've started to use some Trump diction just so that people who speak Mandarin can understand me. Trump talks as if he's had a lot of hard-nosed, hard-headed, face-to-face confrontations with Mandarin speakers in China. Trump knows how to talk hardball with the Chinese. That's what I think based on how he talks. I came over here to Asia because I know that someone in American politics needs to learn those things. That I didn't get that from a theory. I recognize it because I've lived it. Okay, we've had a lot of lawyers in politics in America, which is part of the problem, if not the problem. Now we've got a businessman. Soon, we're going to need people who've lived in other countries. And that's what I've been preparing for. I'm already looking at the game that comes after Trump. I've been looking for the game that comes after Trump for a year, once I decided how I thought the election was going to go. Now realize, when I made that election map, I think we just had the first primary. And I had based my Nevada and my Iowa decision based on how Iowans and Nevadans did things. So that was only after the Hawkeye Caucus. It wasn't after much else. We didn't even have candidates when I made that map. And I not only decided who the candidates were going to be, who the nominees were going to be, I decided which one of them was going to win and what the map was going to look like. And I was pretty right. Now, if I could see that, I'm not here to, ha ha, you're an idiot. I don't think that way. People who make things don't think that way. People who create projects that you go to ask to donate money to your nonprofit that you help people with and live off of, by the way. People who donate money to your charity don't think to rub people's face in successes because that won't lead you to doing what you try to do if you just try to rub people's face in things. What Larry King once said that success is the best revenge or something. And he was referring to anecdotal wisdom from others. I've said enough. I'm going to cut this off. I love you. Love each other. And if you were wrong about what you thought would happen, try to learn so that you know what will happen next time and you're ready for it. Don't have a meltdown like Juan Williams did on national TV. And don't be put off from people who talk the way the people who pay the taxes for your public projects talk and the people who donate the money to pay the bills for your charity talk. If you disagree with them, maybe you should take the opinion that I take. If I disagree with the guy who pays the bills, I'm obviously wrong and need to figure out why, so that maybe I can be the one to pay the bills. Summary from Emily Wilcock. And I'll leave it this way. This is a paraphrase that I accredit to, I kind of don't want to say, Maxwell's, you know, the leadership book guy who also writes a lot on theory. There was a guy in Detroit, works at a hospital, administration at a hospital. He says he won't touch Maxwell's books. But I have never met one scoundrel in my life from whom I did not learn great valuable wisdom, at least on one point. So, Maxwell's paraphrase of Emily Wilcock. There's two types of people in the world today. Just two types of people. No more, I say. Not the good and the bad, for it's well understood that the good are half bad and the bad are half good. No. There's two types of people in the world, I mean. People who lift and people who lean. I'm Jesse Steele. jessesteele.com.